This podcast is part of the Podcavern Network. Check out other Podcavern shows at podcavern.com. Oneiric.
Year 10. Are these recordings even reaching you anymore, Deirdre?
I hope so. My life is peculiar these days. On the one hand, I keep to the big long road, and I work, and I have tasks, and I prepare food, and I meet people, and I fall into pits, and I try not to get devoured by beasts, and I go to church when I can, and it's all very concrete and immediate. And on the other hand, everything is vague and impenetrable. And I never quite know where I am, where I'm going, or why.
Sweet mother of our Lord, my head hurts. Nearly got scalped today, don't you know?
Feeling a bit forlorn, if I'm being entirely honest, Deirdre. A little joy, I think. Missa ad fugam by dear old Palestrina. He's got his work cut out for him.
Right now I'm camped out in the snow near a village called Windstille, which is one of those ironic names because the place is so windy, tourism is almost entirely centered around kitespin. There's a giant kitespin festival here during the summer. They call it summer, though the snow never melts. But it gets warmish, I suppose. It's not warm now. It's verdammt freezing. But I don't mind very much, because I don't have that much body surface that hasn't been cyboed. And after the day I've had, I have an appointment to take care of the rest. The top of my head, such as it is still skin and bone. See? More on that later. So on a local level, I know exactly where I am, right? Tactically, so to speak. Strategically, though, I couldn't quite tell you, Dee. Hatches started sending me random places a while ago, and there's no real incentive to keep a map. All these places exist as a narrative in my head, linked in a chain that tells a story. Where they actually are would only be relevant if I needed to go back, and so far the dreaming has always been sufficient when it comes to revisiting spots. I do my best, verdammt nochmal. Thank Christ for Danica, with whom I meant to spend a little time when I find the way to the right level of the dreaming. She's still at St. Gemma's. She barely ages. She's just as lovely as ever, whenever I make it there. 2 years ago, we spent Christmas together, with Lana, who made it to the proper level as well. That was indescribable, Dee. Lucky to have them. When I started on the big long road, Dee, I often thought of myself as a sort of knight. A knight errant on the search for enlightenment, on a quest for something like the Grail, offering aid and succor to people in need and peril along the way. I think Herr Gustavo did all he could to bolster that idea in his students. The two wings of training, scripture, prayer, hermeneutics on one side, battle and the noble weapons on the other. These days, the thought that I'm any kind of knight feels a little silly. I'm a sort of monk at best, for all that I'm married and a father. So when the villagers ask me to take care of the dragon near the frozen lake, I nearly laughed in their face. I went and asked Herr Gustavo about it, you know. Sought his counsel.
yelled at him a bit, I guess. "Slaying dragons is anecdotal, Vance," he said. That's where I may have yelled. "Settle down, pilgrim," he said. Calm as a cucumber, he was. "I merely mean that when you are done, it's behind you, and no matter how big the task, its impact eventually fades."
What does that even mean?
Your guess is as good as mine, D. Any task that may kill you possesses some sort of intrinsic importance, seems to me. And anyway, anecdotes, lined up end to end, make up a life. I mean, that's what life is. Both Danica and Lana told me to take on the task for the villagers because it has intrinsic importance for them. You know, sound, compassionate thinking. I even got a letter from Val. I keep a P.O. box on one of the levels of the dreaming. Three words.
See things through.
I swear to you, nothing about the world makes any sense anymore. But I don't think he was telling me not to do it. See through things would have been interesting advice, but here we are. So, I showed the villagers my sword, and they were all very impressed. And I sheared through a whacking great block of ice, and they went wild. And I asked them to show me the way to the dragon. We ate first, though. When they have no money, get the food, and get it in advance. They mostly eat meat here. The place isn't exactly an agrarian paradise, so I had to bend a few of my own rules. Let's just say I felt a bit bloated when we set out on the road. Wind up my nose, a thin gray sun low on the horizon, snow crunching underfoot, and me trying not to burp too loudly. Heroic stuff. Turns out the dragon lives deep inside a cave under the snow and the ice. A snow cave, D. So, I had to deal with that. I nearly told them to stuff it, but the thought of Danica prevented me. My God, the thought of you, Deirdre, prevented me. They took me to the mouth of the cave. It wasn't that bad. It was pretty big. The real problem was in my head, you understand, Dee? How long has it been since that day back at the house? The shortest timeline is what, 30 years? If I add in all the years I've lived in the dreaming, it's probably a century since I had that fucking wall of snow collapse on top of me. And when I close my eyes, it feels as though it happened 5 minutes ago. Funny that. I walked a long time, under the earth. Walls of scintillating snow. Stalactites of ice glimmering in the gloom. The villagers had brought grog in a canteen for me, nice and strong, and I'm not ashamed to admit that that canteen was about half empty by the time I'd made it 200 meters into that verdammt cave. At a few points, I had to squeeze through narrow passages of ice and snow, and maybe I hyperventilated a bit. When the metal plates that encase your cyborg chest start creaking because of the pressure, I think you can be forgiven for breathing a little quickly, especially considering my history. I thought about the dragon and how it probably didn't use that entrance to walk into its own cave because it was apparently a big bugger, and there was no way in creation that it could squeeze through some of these verdammt slits. Or maybe they had just been put there as obstacles for my benefit. By the Lord, possibly? To make my adventure feel earned, as it were. It's all story, isn't it? I thought of Val, and Lana, and so many things as I trekked. See, I've had a lot of time to think about something Val told me about Lana. And he's right about that one thing. Lana is on the big long road. She has to be. Do you know why? Because we can meet in the dreaming. I don't mean that I dream about her. I mean we can meet and live together for a while. I've had dreams of years with her. We started a little shop to sell the honey from her bees on one level. I remember every moment of that, and so does she. Helped her get it off the ground, then back on the big long road for me. You know. And the thing about the dreaming, Dee, the dreaming, not dreams, you understand, is that it is unlocked inside one's soul by going through the hatchet. I've known that for years. I remember telling you this years ago, Deirdre. How did it not leap out at me from the moment Lana came with me to Aisha is beyond me. I'm one of the clever ones, I think. But I still manage to do or say or think 5 stupid things before breakfast every day. The hatches are the key. Not all walkers know this. Not all walkers tame the dreaming. Some of us go through life thinking it's all dreams. Not all walkers learn about hatches, you see. But I'm Edval, possibly by chance, possibly not. And I'm one of the walkers who understand hatches now. Hatches have a little soul about them, remember? And they change you. Lana can be in the dreaming because she's been through hatches. More than one, bank on that. And that means she's a walker too. I know now that this is the truth. I don't know if it means anything. The truth doesn't always. The ice corridor finally opened up into an enormous grotto with an icy lake in the middle. And by icy, I mean it was mostly iced over. The ceiling was ice crystals that glittered, blue and green, from who knows what light source. A sort of cold cathedral lit from within, I think. And I could see shadows, sinuous shadows, sort of slinking around inside the walls. No dragon, though. I sat down on the shore, my sword across my knees, near a spot where the ice was cracked and the water sloshed over it a bit, making lacy spirals across the frozen surface. I must have fallen asleep. I don't remember if I dreamed. I lie. I don't know why I should lie to you. I'm sorry. I'm ashamed. I did dream. I had a nightmare where Lana turned into a mindless, cold monster. And I had to kill her. And I nearly went mad. I woke up in tears, sobbing so loud it echoed inside the cave. And the ice exploded upward, and the dragon shot out of the water with a shattering roar. Oh my lord, Deirdre. That dragon was beautiful. An ice dragon. Not made of ice, not exactly, but every scale blindingly white. Its eyes were pale blue, and they had fire within them. It crawled out of the lake, water cascading over its back, with its translucent wings opened near to the ceiling. It reared over me. I thought it would just fry me right where I sat. I actually dropped my sword when I stood up. Made such an embarrassing clank as it fell to the ground. The dragon waited for me to pick it up. Then it spoke, and it had a deep woman's voice. "We will not fight," she said. "We will talk." I was not ready for that. Those words terrified me. I yelled back something idiotic like, "Never!" or "Die!" And I charged. The dragon seemed to shrug. It swiped once at me with its talons. I felt my skull crack, and the skin high on my forehead split. I was blinded by pain, and I fell to my knees. But by the time I managed to wipe my eyes clear of the blood, the dragon was already back in the lake, sinking under the water in the ice. I heard her voice call out from under the surface. "I'll be here," she said. I dragged my sorry ass back out of the cavern, trailing blood behind me, and don't that look stark on snow? And the villagers, who didn't quite know how to react, carried me back. They suddenly weren't too hot on hosting me another night, to be honest, so after they, at least, arranged for the Cybo tech to show up tomorrow morning, they retired, and that's why I'm holed up just outside the village, bewildered and with the mother of all headaches. My injuries will not be a problem. They probably would kill me if they weren't seen to, but I can manage one night. Gonna have to put that brain of mine into something a bit stronger. No choice. It's the one thing I can't lose. That's where the magic, such as it is, happens. But I'm not looking forward to meeting my wife with a body wholly made out of metal, Deirdre. When I'm feeling up to it, I'll go back into that cave. I'll dive into the water, and I'll have me a little talk with the dragon. Not exactly looking forward to that either. Talking doesn't often pan out, but I remember all of this. That dragon coming up from the bottom of the lake, I remember it forward, and it would be stupid not to let it happen. Now I'm sitting down and having a bit of a think. No one in the village ever said just what they have against the dragon. We'll see. And there's a version of my story somewhere where I killed my daughter, if the dreaming is to be believed. Or was that just a dream? I don't suppose I'll let another 5 years go by before I send you another recording, Deirdre, so bis bald, and all my love to you, your husband, your children, and the rest of the household. Keep me in your prayers, if you would.
Notes to Oneiric, Year 10, by Tevor Troy, Doctoral Candidate, Alternative Narrative Traditions, Université de Montréal, February 12, 684. UDMID TT603782. This is probably the first real example in Oneiric of a basic fantasy beat. A knight meets a dragon to defend a village. But as is typical for this story, it is immediately undercut by the farcical, truncated battle scene. I will note that this dragon is the one about which Vaughn's dreamed back in episode 4 of season 1, and which may or may not have been mentioned by Lana earlier this season. We have not quite seen the last of her. The author also finally lets Vaughn's describe, fairly cogently, the essential structure of the Oneiric universe. It is a consciousness-centric, indeed an emotion-centric model. Places and events are not naturally linked. As far as the concept of timeline is concerned, they are in fact divorced from one another. What makes events line up in the dreaming and the waking world is not time, here understood as a chronological sequence. It is consciousness, the soul, and above all, the heart. Emotions. Love, joy, happiness, surprise, boredom, sadness, anger, despair, hate, all of these responses link events together in a way meaningful to the pilgrim. They become a story that makes sense to the person living it. I believe that the offhand remark stating that there exists a version of the story where Vons kills his child is a cheeky allusion to an early plot point later abandoned. I offer as evidence a document which I found in the retrieved Google archives, an outline of Oneiric that differs in many important respects from the show we eventually got. The link to this is in the show notes.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to live in a city full of superheroes? To literally see people fly across the sky? Crap.
What are you up to, Angus?
Oh, hey, Sal. I'm trying to record an ad for the podcast.
Heroes don't do paperwork?
Yeah, that one.
Need any help?
Yeah, actually. I'm just trying to tell people about the show, about how you and I work at a newspaper in Super City, and how we interview various citizens, from the people we call neighbors to the city's greatest heroes. But I'm having trouble wording it.
You could just use that section you recorded and put that in.
Huh. Yeah, I suppose I could. Thanks, Sal.
Don't worry about it. I'm off to the office supply store. It got hit with a shrink ray, so everything is 50% off. Want to come?
You know what? I kind of do. For those of you hearing this, if you want to hear more about the thrilling adventures and heroics of Super City, come check out Heroes Don't Do Paperwork on the Podcavern Network. All right, let's go.